Hello and welcome to episode number 65 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
I'm Robert Rosenthal.
We are in the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning in the Armory on the campus of the University of Illinois. And we are just about 1 week from kickoff to the 2026 football season. But Robert, episode number 65 is actually an unfortunate number.
Why is 65 unfortunate?
Our guest today is Martin O'Donnell, and his number was
70. Hold on, 64.
Just missed it.
64.
Just missed it.
Yes. Good point. Good point.
Many of you know Martin O'Donnell, All-American offensive lineman for the U of I in the mid-2000s. His tenure culminated in the famous 2007 season that resulted in a trip to the Rose Bowl in January, New Year's Day of 2008. And Robert, your relationship with Martin runs back quite a ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very simple, like, he and I sat together in the press box in like the 12, 13, 14 season and watched games, and then we would get together and watch camp practices together, and just, you know, a friendship over the years. And I've had him on little things I've done on a line of board, a one-on-one podcast and things like that. So he and I have talked a lot of football over the years.
You famously are one of the 17 that care more about football than basketball. And if you could name the 17 total individuals, I think Martin would be in that.
Absolutely.
Not just, I don't mean just that he cares more about basketball. I just mean, who are the 17 most passionate Illinois football fans? Although he's a fan, obviously. That is a special category, though, when you wore the jersey.
Yes, yes. He goes in front of me on the list. Also a big basketball fan, I should note. I saw him at the Final Four.
I am not here to question anybody's basketball loyalty.
Remember, the second half of my Twitter bio is, I'm one of the 17 Illinois fans who cares more about football than basketball. And because of that, people think I hate basketball. Everybody just has this like, well, if he's obsessed with that, then he must hate this thing that's great. Don't hate it.
It's just
love
like,
it, but
it's just like you always tell me. You have several children. You love them all. You just love one of them more.
That's, yes, yes. And two of them listen to the podcast regularly, so now you just gave them complexes.
They both know which one.
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding. I am just kidding.
We've got jokes.
We've got jokes. I'm not sure what my purpose is here other than to just say that we can have Martin O'Donnell on, and it's going to be great, and you're going to enjoy this conversation. Martin, for those of you who don't know, used to be the radio analyst also in the booth alongside Brian Barnhart for many years on the radio network, but now he's just a civilian and one who gets to take it all in. By the way, he works for Busey Bank and has put together a great career with Busey. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce Martin O'Donnell to you all, but one thing we must do first.
We must light the eye.
So thrilled to have with us here at the table, Martin O'Donnell, former All-American offensive lineman for the University of Illinois, part of the Rose Bowl team in 2007, and later a radio analyst for the Illini Radio Network, and here to talk some Illini football with us on Light the Eye. And Martin, I'm so glad you are here, because I cannot think of two guys to talk football that need my help discussing Illinois football. So
sure,
whatever your questions are, Robert, you too. I'm here for you.
Good.
And welcome to Light the
Eye. I submitted them ahead of time.
Okay.
I hope you got that email.
Actually, I really don't know what I'm doing here, other than I just introduced the segment. I feel like I should just walk away and listen to you two talk.
Now, all I would do, I would just be sitting here telling stories about like him and I in the press box in 2014 getting in trouble for cheering during D'Angelo Bentley's fumble
return for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Standing up high-fiving each other like this.
What was that?
He just put his hand right there and I would just like hit it five times. We got a little excited, but you can't cheer in the press box, and I've never cheered in the press box.
But I've also been in a press box with you, Martin, and I know one look can do a lot to corral and rein in somebody.
Yeah.
Look,
true story.
He found the perfect job when he was doing calling the radio because he could let all those emotions out. We remember those emotions of the Wisconsin field goal, other big moments where you were able to. I was jealous. I'll be honest. I was jealous. On the other end of the press box, I can't make a sound, and you can woohoo all you want.
I did woohoo.
You
several,
did?
Several times. Yeah.
You did woohoo. Yeah. You went a little viral due to your woohooing, too, sir. Mm-hmm.
I once made a radio spot just all about you. I don't even know if it ever aired, but I made a radio spot. I just pulled clips from you. It was, you were funny.
Did it just sound like somebody being tortured?
Just make it sound. Yeah, no words, just sounds.
I think my favorite was I said, you know, I referenced something about your opinions and you had just said, Jim Harbaugh's a peach.
Yeah, I remember that. It still stands. Yeah. Yeah, he's a real peach.
Gem of a guy. Yep. Really miss him, don't you?
Yeah.
So how many years did you do that? You did that 9 years, was it?
I did. I was the analyst for 9 years. On
9 years.
Yep.
Okay.
And I think I did the post-game call-in show for 7 years ahead of that. I think I've done the math before.
16 years of radio stuff. That's crazy, right?
It's kind of crazy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you stepped down from doing it, 2 years ago?
This will be my third season not doing it.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay, so can I point out that we've gone 10-3 and 9-4 without you?
Yes, Robert. I literally mentioned that to somebody earlier today.
Yes.
They said, oh, we're going to miss you on the radio. I'm like, well, there's a direct correlation between when we got really good at football and when I stopped doing the radio. But hey, I'm a team player.
That's right. 19-7 since you stepped away.
Yeah. Should have done it sooner.
We appreciate your sacrifice.
What is it like? First, I'm sure the questions were, what's it like not playing? Mm-hmm. And then, what's it like not being on the radio? I mean, you never lost your love or your loyalty or your fandom, but what's it like just being a guy who can watch the team?
I mean, I think my feeling on it, I mean, I'm just another uninformed fan pretty much at this point. You know, I think I
qualify for a podcast.
Yeah. Well, hey, look.
Look where you are.
Yeah, look where I am. Yeah. But no, I think from my perspective, I mean, I miss it. It's definitely different, right? I mean, because everything, I mean, you guys know you have rhythms, right? And you have game day, and for home games, I do this, and for away games, I do that. And, you know, for me, like, I'd kind of sketch out my week knowing, you know, I knew I would want to, you know, I would always rewatch our game on Sundays, and then I'd go to the Monday press conference, you know, and I had to rewatch the game, so I had somewhat intelligent questions, or at least informed questions to ask, and then I would rewatch the other team's last three games at some point throughout the week, depending if we were traveling, if we weren't traveling, and all that stuff. But no, I mean, from my perspective, so it's definitely different just in terms of rhythms. I think, you know, I obviously miss, you know, I miss getting, you know, being more a part of the program, right? Because, you know, I mean, when you're there, even if you're covering it, when you're at the press conference, there's not, I mean, there are, you know, there's certainly probably more reporters at the press conferences now than there were in 2014, 15, 16. And I think that's reflective of the interest in the program, obviously. But it's just different, right? So you feel like a little bit more part of the program. You get to see, you know, you get to see the coaches and form relationships with them. And I still know, obviously, you know, Brett and Barry and Bart. But there's been some other turnover on the staff. And so not being as informed on that. But, you know, honestly, the piece that I probably miss the most is being informed, right? Having intelligent opinions about, you know, both Illinois and the teams that we're playing based upon, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, my view of, hey, how do they do on film? And, you know, I did some statistical stuff, but from my perspective, it was always more a little bit about the narrative. What do we do well? You know, what does the other team do well? How do I think this is going to go? And then you kind of, you know, you kind of track that throughout, you know, the course of the broadcast. So I miss that piece of it. I miss not being as informed about Illinois and what we're doing, and how did the left guard play in this game, and what progression have they shown, you know, over the last three games. I mean, I used to have opinions on those sorts of things, but I certainly don't miss it. I miss it sometimes on Saturdays, but I don't miss it all the time that went into it, you know. And so, you know, I have a 15-year-old daughter, a 12-year-old son, and a soon-to-be 7-year-old son, and, you know, obviously I have a wonderful wife who allowed me to, you know, do that stuff for a long time, and I enjoyed it, but, you know, you only have so much time. And so I don't regret at all giving it up. I certainly miss being informed, but the other stuff way outweighs it.
On the flip side of it, that's what I was going to point out, is you and I had a conversation last year about what it's like sharing it with her. I mean, even at the Final Four.
She
came with you to the Final Four,
Ava, right? Came to the Final Four.
And just being away from all that, being able to enjoy the bowl games and this and that, just from a straight up introduce your kids to this thing you love and everything else that had, I mean, talk about perfectly timed. Like, they've been at the ages where they're, you know, full awareness of what goes on a Saturday and everything else and how much fun it can be. So talk about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that was a big part of it was, you know, I didn't go, you know, we would go to basketball games, and so we would kind of do that Illinois thing as a family, as basketball games. But during football season, I mean, I never watched Illinois football games with my kids, like, as they were growing up, because either I was covering, you know, even when I wasn't doing, you know, the analyst stuff on the radio, I was still, if it was a home game, I was watching the game in the press box and then going and doing post game. And so that's been the great thing is, you know, because of that, I mean, we've been to, you know, like the ReliaQuest Bowl, for instance. So I was still doing the radio. So we got to go out on Tampa. We had a great time, but I didn't watch the game with them.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, to be able to go to the Citrus Bowl and have us go to that as a family, and to go last year to the Music City Bowl was fantastic. Again, two great games. But at the same time, I've been able to, you know, I took my son Mikey, you know, we went to the Michigan, you know, 100-year game. Right. Mm-hmm. So that was an awesome memory. Last year, you know, my daughter and I, we went to the Northwestern game, the snow game. Right. And then like these things that otherwise aren't going to happen. And that's exactly why I did it was, you know, you only have so much time. Obviously, kids grow up quickly. But to be able to enjoy those things and have kind of the fan experience and just kind of be able to share that, you know, with them and also with, you know, the rest of the folks in the stands, I mean, it's fun.
It's funny you say that because so I've always said that the dark side of the moon for me with Illinois football is 03 to 07 with our boys, their age, they're in sports, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And all I missed was like a 2-10 season, you know, like
that overlaps directly with my playing career. So thank you for that. You're welcome. By the way, you didn't.
07 was the first year we got, you know, we would go to a game kind
directly
of thing.
Directly with my playing career.
Yes.
I didn't miss much. Okay. Thanks. Yes. Thanks, Robert.
Yes. Yeah. You're welcome. 07 is when I got tickets again, season tickets again.
Okay.
And that was the year we got horseshoe tickets. That was the year they did that whole, like, what was it, $60 a ticket for a season tickets thing or whatever. And so we jumped back in and the boys were a little older and there was less, you know, less stuff going on a Saturday or Little League or whatever kind of thing. But it is funny that people always say like, well, why don't you just quit on Illinois football those 4 years? I'm like, no, like life gets really, really busy. And I know your life has been that. So I'm guessing you have like zero regrets of like, the time frame and how you did this and when you did this, right?
No regrets.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk Illinois football.
Okay.
Okay. And I want to frame all of this in, let's just put it in terms of you and I watching football games together. So, you and I have done a couple of these just like one-on-one podcasts going back to like 2013 or so, or 2012 maybe, kind of thing. And we used to do it quite often. We used to sit together in the press box and this and that. So you and I shared this, like, is it ever going to change? And that's the main thing I want to talk about today, is just the framework of how far we've come. So if you don't mind sharing what your tradition was when we would lose and what you would do, if you don't mind sharing that on a podcast, tell the folks about where you would stop on your way home from the game and what you would purchase in order to
mark the losses. I would stop at a local store and I would pick up a beverage to drink when we lost. And
a different kind every week, right?
There were not a lot of good times, because a lot of those times also, if you'll remember, you know, you would be driving back to St. Louis, and so we'd talk on the phone, and I'd just be getting done either with, I think it was when I was probably doing the radio calls more, but, you know, and just, you know, and it was a struggle, right? And I think every Illinois fan lived through that. We've all lived through that, and to be able to, you know, and I experienced it as a player, and then you'd kind of have these little peaks or kind of this stability. And then all of a sudden the bottom would kind of fall out again. And it was just kind of rinse and repeat. And it's just, you know, why, you know, it's the definition of insanity. Why do we continue to do this? And, but to look back on it now and be like, you know, again, our record in the last, you know, 19 wins over the last 2 years. And, yep. you know, again, it still gives my heart a little flutter of joy when, you know, I'm listening to a national college football broadcast and they're talking about the SEC versus the Big Ten. And they're saying, well, the SEC makes these arguments, but then, you know, look, Illinois just beat two SEC teams in bowl games.
Yeah.
So those arguments don't really hold yeah. water. You know, like, yeah. I love that piece of it. And honestly, there was a time where, you know, and again, every Illinois football fan has experienced this is, you know, you walk into it, and again, I always took every perspective of every game. How do we win this game, right? And again, even when we weren't great, you know, to me, you know, hey, my keys to the game might be we have to win the turnover battle by three, mm-hmm. right? Now, again, it's really hard to win the turnover battle by three, but if you turn the other team over three times and you don't turn the ball over, like, you might have a chance to be in there. And there were a lot of games where it's like, boy, we really got to have everything hit in order yeah. for us to be in the game yeah. in the fourth quarter, right?
Yep.
You know, and I think my expectation, the line I always use for people, and you got, hey, what are your expectations for the year? I'm like, I just want us to play meaningful games in November.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what that means, mm-hmm. right? It can mean a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
But and a lot of times it was the drive for six, yes. right? Like that was it. How mm-hmm. do we get to six, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now I think, you know, gratefully, you know, our eyes have been raised to where, okay, you know, Brett Bielema and his staff have this program in a really good position. And there's a whole other conversation about college sports, what it is, what it isn't.
Yeah.
You have all the transferring, NIL, and it is different. And I do like the fact that, you know, Coach B just rolls with it, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, here's what we're going to do. Okay, let's try to adjust. Let's try to maneuver. Let's make it work. But that's where we are. And again, in this whole uncertainty that is collegiate sports and collegiate football right now, you know, I don't have a lot of concerns because we have stability, which mm-hmm. was one of our biggest Achilles heels is we could never have stability. And therefore we were tearing it down and repapering it every 5 or 6 years. But now we have stability, we have success. You know, we've proven that, hey, anything that you want to do as a player, you can come to Illinois and do
mm-hmm.
right. And again, a lot of, you know, people want to be a part of winning organizations, of winning businesses, of winning programs, and to be able to say, hey, you can have all these wins and you can have the success that you want to have and do it at the University of Illinois, I think is fantastic. And again, in all of this chaos and the uncertainty and everything that's happening, I'm going to bet on the team and the program that has somebody in charge that knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like I'm going to bet on the leadership, you know, at the University of Illinois and Josh Whitman and Brett Bielema and down to the coaching staff. I mean, and you have that stability with like a Barry Lunny offensive coordinator. Yeah, there's some questions on offense. Do I think we're going to be fine? Yeah, I think we're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
we're going to make it work because it's year, what, five of Barry, four?
Yeah, five for Barry.
Yeah, right? Like yeah.
The reason I ask it that way is because, again, you and I would always talk on those times on the way home. You're stopping by a store in Savoy to maybe get a different bottle of something that you didn't have. And you said, when we're good someday, I'm going to have the best basement bar for people to stop by.
I stopped doing that a while ago.
Yes,
yeah.
For people to stop by. I was just curious if you ever sat back and were like, wow, like, haven't bought a new bottle of something I haven't tried in a long time because
yeah.
we actually have that program now.
Yeah, no, we do. And that's part of it too is, you know, when you're covering it and you're really close to it, like it always is personal, right? Like you see, and especially when you live in a community like Champaign, when it doesn't work out for the football program, you know, there are families that have to move, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are kids that my kids go to school with and they're friends, and oh, all of a sudden that family has to uproot and go to, you know, pick another location around the country where they can find a job. And you see the real human impact, and that just raises the stakes, right? Like I want Illinois to win, but I also want, you know, and this is kind of where I am in my life, like I want stability for those families and those
sure.
coaches, right?
Yeah.
Like just because
yeah.
when you can do that, then it's like, hey, Illinois is a great place to be. Champaign-Urbana is a great community, and you can win, and you can have success, and it can be stable. And that's part of it. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I reflect on that a lot now. It's just, you know, we are in a very good place. And you look at where Illinois football is and Illinois basketball and Illinois women's basketball, and it's like, you know, these are the good old days,
these
right?
These really, really, really are.
One of the – okay, Vegas – at least coming into the season, I don't haven't looked lately, but Vegas, they, the odds makers, mm-hmm. put Illinois up 7.5 wins,
mm-hmm.
over under, take your pick. And I think that's something truly remarkable because, and you experienced it or kind of saw it the year after the Rose Bowl,
mm-hmm.
You know, the year going back before that, the year after the Sugar Bowl, things right. tanked. It's just always that get somewhere and then, and even after the 2019 season, you know, the upset over, or the comeback over Michigan State, the James McCourt kick, but the next year, 2020, we all know how that went, how right. that went. Now to come off a 10 win and a 9 win season and go, they might step back a bit to 7 wins. I mean, that shows you, and I think one of the reasons, to your point, that people can project that, whether it happens or not, is the trust that they, the odds makers, have in the coaching staff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a sign of respect, right? I mean, I think it's, you know, but I think it's a sign of respect. I also think it's also, again, it's reflective of what, you know, the rest of college football is, because you say, hey, we lost a lot of production. So did pretty much everybody else in the country.
Fair.
Right? I mean, every program, and again, that was one of the things, and that's the part that would have to be hard if I were doing the broadcast now, is it used to be like, hey, if we're playing Rutgers for the third year in a row, like I will have frame of reference for, you know, this kid was a part-time player 2 years ago. Last year was the first time started. Hey, I remember him being pretty good. Hey, you know, I look forward to watching him on tape this year, right? Like, and now all of a sudden, like, poof, those guys are all gone. I mean, they're just, or they're somewhere else, or they're playing in the SEC, or they're playing elsewhere in the Big Ten, right? Like, but again, I think it is reflective of the fact that, you know, Vegas, at least in this case, there's a recognition that, you know, Illinois remains a real program. They'll figure it out. Again, I think it's also, you know, again, we are a program with 19 wins in what is really very clearly now, you know, one of the two conferences that matter most in college football.
One of the other things I think can give people confidence that you're going to have a winning season is the aggregate talent on the roster. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you could, if you had a perspective of, not to, you know, any one player or any one position, but there's always the cliff at some point on your roster where starters, backups, mm-hmm. and, you know, and the sharper that cliff is, inevitably there's injuries and whatever. Did you sense that as a player or in the seasons afterwards where you knew maybe we're strong here, but right behind it, it isn't? Do you sense just with your eyes even now, or that, hey, the second and the third and the fourth strings collectively are better players?
I think it's a good question. I guess I never really thought of it in terms of, you know, tiers or position groups, right? I think, you know, a piece of it that I always look at is in terms of playmakers, right? Like, and again, I go back to somebody like a Mikey Dudek, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Illinois with Mikey Dudek and without Mikey Dudek was very different. Mm-hmm. There was other talent on the roster, but yep. having that one person that's the easy button on offense, you know, is really impactful and really matters, right? And so in terms of the positions, you know, so I don't really know if you can – I think you can sense it. I think you can look overall when – you know, and I think, you know, something like the NFL draft is also very reflective of this, right? You look at draft picks that are coming out. Okay, does that team have talent? Okay, and now Illinois, we've put guys out into the draft, and I just read something, you know, maybe yesterday looking at other Big Ten programs, and it was like Wisconsin didn't have anybody drafted last year at all for the first time, I think, since 1978, mm-hmm. right? So you can have perspectives of your roster, but ultimately the NFL will tell you, mm-hmm. do we think these guys have the ability to play at the next level? And so I think when you look at it, there were long stretches there where he's like, okay, maybe we get somebody in the sixth round or the seventh round. But I think you look at Illinois here over the last 5 years in particular, you know what, that, you know, the 22 defense had five defensive backs that are now playing in the NFL and yep. some of them making a ton of money, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's fantastic.
You know, some of them could fund their own jersey patches.
They could. They could. But yeah, at one point you had the highest paid safety in the NFL in Kirby Joseph and how the highest paid corner in the NFL in Devin Witherspoon. I mean, I think that's one, it's great. It's great for them individually, for their families, for them personally. It's also great for Illinois, you know, to be able to shine in a little bit of that reflected glory of like, hey, they came through the University of Illinois. So I think, you know, I always looked at it also from that perspective of who can play at the next level here. Who do I think it is? And again, there are some people that are just absolute no doubters. There are other guys where you're like, yeah, I don't really know if they can make it or not. But again, the more of those people you have on both sides of the ball, in a lot of ways, that's going to determine what your season looks like, because a lot of it does. There are 11 players on the field, but you got to have that guy that can get the sack on third down. You got to have the guy, you know, that is going to win a one-on-one route on the outside. You got to have the offensive line, hey, you know, it's fourth and 6 inches, and we need to have this to ice the game. You got to have the guys that can make the push in the middle of the line, right? So I think that's kind of how I always look at talent, is what are the NFL guys on the roster? What does that look like? And again, you really can't see that until you look backwards, and because you can have suspicions in real time. You know, people can get hurt, things can happen. But that's just kind of how I always view talent.
Well, that makes sense. You look back at the most successful teams and how many guys made the NFL rosters. Yeah. You can do the same with basketball.
Yeah.
Oh, that 05 team, I think everybody in the starting lineup at least experienced the NBA.
That's right.
You know, and right now, NBA rosters are full of Illinois players. And I can look at baseball, too. Oh, that was a year a bunch of guys got drafted. Whether you get to the major leagues in baseball, it's a little bit different animal. But,
right.
You know, guys that scouts go, we want to give them a shot, tells you if you have a talented team.
I want your perspective. So the big talk in this preseason is the defense, right? New defensive scheme and this and that. As a former offensive lineman, I want to use your as a player perspective. The majority of talk, and really we don't know exactly what the defense is going to be, but the majority of the talk is it's going to be...
Robert, it's a 3-3-5.
Yes. It's going to be a little more... Let's just call it risky. If we just want
attacking.
Yes. If we want to characterize the Aaron Henry DFS as fairly safe and, all right, even if something goes wrong, Miles Scott is back there 20 yards off the line of scrimmage. He's going to clean things up. We're going to keep everything in front of us, keep everything underneath, not give them anything over the top, you know, that type of thing. This defense might give some things over the top because they're trying to get a 9-yard loss on this play.
Yeah.
When you were prepping for those teams, the more aggressive team versus more, you know, like, I'm just curious how it was approached in the offensive room, the offensive line room, as to how to, you know, if this is a, if it's a stunting defense, if it's a twist and stunt defense that does that all the time, tell me about like your approach to that kind of thing or how teams might approach this defense.
Yeah, I think, you know, and there's obviously a bunch of different shades of defense. But yeah, and so yes, if it's an attacking defense, a blitzing defense, a stunting defense, you know, again, anytime we played, for example, and again, as you pointed out, 03 to 07, mostly forgettable for Illinois football purposes, at least in the Roosevelt, at least in the Roosevelt household.
But, whatever. Yeah. Yes.
But, you know, look, any time we played, you know, a lower level team, so we played a MAC team, anything else like that, we knew that they were just going to throw the playbook at us, right? Because they had nothing to lose, right? And so what that did was it did tax you more mentally because you knew they were not just going to sit there in base defense and try to beat you one-on-one, that they were going to have to manufacture an opportunity to make a negative play. And so I think, you know, and so those were always, and I'm trying to think too, like I remember even in 2007, like Ohio State's defense did a lot of different stunts and cross dogs and, you know, a lot of movement. And again, because they had incredible, they had a great defense, they're really athletic. And then they're like, hey, now we're going to move on you and just try to really multiply how difficult this is to block. Mm-hmm. And so it does put a lot of mental pressure on your offensive line in terms of preparation, because instead of having to prepare for, you know, so that's one side. The flip side is like what Iowa traditionally was, where it was like Iowa would run three blitzes.
Yes.
They would line up in two techniques over each of the offensive guards, and they're going to go one way or the other. It's like, so Iowa mentally was always the easiest defense to prepare for. Now, physically, you knew you were going to be in for a dogfight because they're like, hey, we're not going to try to stunt and do these different things. We think our guys can beat your guys, and let's see how it works out on Saturday. But the mental load of, again, you only have so many days to prepare. If you're playing Saturday, you know, Sunday or Monday, one of those is an off day. One of the days you're going to kind of look at stuff, go through film. But then install really doesn't take place a lot of times until, again, depending on your Sunday or Monday. But you only have a couple days to install. You really only have like 2 days to work on it. And so when you're approaching something differently, and that's the part of the thesis that I do think makes a lot of sense that Brett talked about, is we want to be a tough, you know, a tough prep. And so if you're doing something different, again, you know, it does make it more challenging when you're coming off another game. And okay, now this is good. And it's very different. It's going to be different for the offensive lineman. It's going to be different for the backs in terms of protections. It's going to be different in terms of the quarterback in terms of getting things set up appropriately. So, you know, I'm anxious to kind of see what that looks like. It also sounds like, you know, we ran some variation of this for a decent amount last year. And again, you talk about, hey, it's a 3-3-5. It's like, yeah, well, the defense that we've been running previously, a lot of times it looked like a bear defense, right? You just cover up five guys and you got man-to-man on the outside. So there's aspects of it that aren't going to be that different. But what it tells me is, yes, we want to be a tough prep, but also a recognition we need to have more negative plays. We need to get more tackles for loss. We need to get more sacks. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, again, you just look at the statistics and there haven't been as many negative plays over the past several years as you would like to see. I mean, again, below median, certainly in the Big Ten. So, you know, I think that makes sense. I'm interested to see how the personnel matches up. And, you know, the other thing that I think, and I'm sure, you know, you and others have written about in the offseason is, again, anytime you have a scheme change, there's different body types and different players that fit better in this scheme than they did in the last scheme. Mm-hmm. And and vice versa. And so always there's going to be somebody that emerges here in the first few weeks where you're like, holy cow, where did this guy come from? And you know, hey, he's been on the bench for 2 years, but the scheme, it fit him perfectly. He's aggressive, all those different things. So yes, to go back and answer your question, it does make a more difficult prep. Anytime you have to spend more time, again, if there's 25 blitzes to look at, you know, in a given week versus four, and again, most teams have maybe 10 that they like to run, but the more exotic you get, the more challenging it is, and the more opportunity you have, again, the more different things you throw at the offense, the more opportunities you have that just one person screws up. Because that's all you need. You need one person not to step the right way or to miss the protection. And again, it could be the tight end, it could be the back quarterback, offensive line. You know, you're the more variables you introduce into there, the more opportunities you have really for just a missed assignment where somebody blows something, let alone you get on an edge or you have an athletic advantage up front and you're able to create some havoc.
You following all this?
Absolutely. I found that, like I said this on our last episode when we were talking about the defense, that it feels like a lot of this was born out of the Wisconsin game last year. Wisconsin had bad offense, like one of the worst in the Big Ten, if not the country. And they just did the 4 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards. And, you know, there was no – you get them in one negative play and you've stopped their drive, but you can't get a negative play.
Right.
You know? They're just a little bit and they take over the game and they wear you down and they wear you down and lost to a 4-8 team that we absolutely should have beaten. And Brett Bielema had some quotes in that post game of, like, changes are coming. And I feel like from that game forward was this, like – We can't let people do that to us because it makes us rely on. I mean, Northwestern tried it in the very next game in the snow, kind of thing. Obviously, different because of that. But you know, that was a close game until Miles Scott got the two picks in the fourth quarter. So yeah, there's this. I have that same view toward this, that there was a desire to get some negative plays. That's the main focus here is. Get to 3rd and 16, and maybe our interceptions go up from like 6 last year, and 3 of those 6 were in the final game. So, it's I agree with that. That there's a desire here for negative plays.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so offense wise, you've watched 5 years of this will be the 5th year of a very Lunny offense. You're an offensive guy. You're an offensive lineman. Given the offense that you've seen and some of the struggles in the run game, there's been a lot of talk in this offseason of, like, can this team, you know, maybe Valentine as his third-year player is ready for a little breakout, a featured back kind of thing. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for? I know when you're watching a game, you're watching the linemen, and you'll make a sound of like, oh, he missed, you know. You know a half a second into the play, he was one half step too far left and the play's going to get blown up. What are you watching for from the line this year to improve the run game?
I think it's just consistency. You know, I think it's really just consistency. And even if, you know, this is the flip side of the havoc plays on defense, right? Don't allow negative plays, right? And I think I think we've seen a fair amount of that over the past few years is, you know, again, it's just somebody, it's a lack of consistency. Somebody not even doesn't make their block, but you know, loses immediately versus you know, losing slowly, which there's some grace to.
Right? Yes,
you know,
yes.
I got very practiced at that.
Yes.
But yeah, so I think it's really just consistency, right? Like I think and again, this is the point where again I have no idea what any of the teams we're playing this year actually play. But I look overall at consistency and I think it's just a matter of, you know, how many, you know, part of it is. And this is something, again, I saw firsthand as an offensive lineman is, okay, if you have one guy that's struggling, you can scheme around that, right? If you have one, if you know you have a weak spot, you can scheme around that with protections and with help. Okay, if you have two or more people that can't win one-on-one or struggle more times than not, it just puts a lot more stress on your entire offense and it doesn't allow the playbook to fully take place, right? Like, you know, again, there've been plenty of instances in my career where, again, I was a bad play-action blocker. Right, just because, you know, mentally I never trusted myself to really fake the run and then transition to pass pro because I was never felt great about pass protection. Well, you know, subsequently if we had something where I was lined up on the backside and I had a one-on-one block, like there were times we couldn't run those longer developing play action plays because I couldn't hold up in protection. You know, so I think again, but also on some of those lines we had a couple of fires we were trying to put out. You know, from a schematic standpoint, So I think, you know, what do I look for? It's really consistency. And again, would I love them to be able to dominate? Yeah, I'd love them to be able to dominate. Is that going to happen? I'm not sure, right? I mean, again, there's new pieces there. You know, I will say I went to the scrimmage last week. You know, again, I was encouraged, you know, watching the offensive line. Again, I think the footwork looked good. You know, the physicality seemed solid there. But I think a lot of it's going to be who's going to be, again, you talk about consistency. Well, where does that start? I think it starts with leadership up front. Like, who's really going to be the leader on the offensive line? I think it should be Renfro, the center, right? I mean, the guy's in his sixth or seventh year.
Yep.
But how quickly can they gel and allow them? Because I do, I mean, I have confidence in Barry's, you know, play calling. He's got to put him in the right plays. You know, I'm curious to see what do the play calls look like, you know, for Caton versus what they were for Luke over the past couple of years. And even thinking back, okay, well, are we going to be running more stuff like we kind of ran with Tommy? I don't know if that answers your question.
It absolutely does, and it leads me into this one, which is, let's go back to 2007. The thing people may not remember about 2007 is the line from 06 to 07, it was this, well, what if we tried this piece here and this piece here? So Xavier Fulton goes from, that was the year he went from defensive tackle to offensive tackle, right?
07 was his first year on the offensive line.
Yeah, so they're like, all right, here's what we're going to do. Offensive line struggles last year. We're going to take that defensive lineman and we're going to move him to left tackle. We're going to take last year's left tackle and we're moving to right tackle, Kim, right?
Yep.
We're going to take this freshman, John, and we're going to put him at right guard because he's really good and we're just going to throw him to the Wolves.
Yeah.
Then we're going to leave Ryan and Martin here. Mm-hmm. You were the only two in the same positions the year before.
Yep.
But even in 06, didn't you play some right tackle or was that 05?
No, I didn't play it.
Okay. Okay.
I wasn't athletic enough to play tackle.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. So it was just this, like, all right, we're going to, let's mix things up. Let's try this and try him over here and that defensive tackle over here. And it just worked. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of talk about, like, can this offensive line, you got four new starters, you're bringing in guys from Colorado State. Tell me about how things gelled that year and how it could, if everything goes right, you know, hopefully that could apply to this line.
Yeah, I think it can gel. It doesn't have to be a long-term process to gel. I mean, I think offensive line, again, a lot of it is about building chemistry. You know, there's a lot of communication that you don't have time to verbalize in the course of the game. And a lot of it, you know, again, you build chemistry by building trust. And so just spending more time around the other guys. And so even if not everybody's able to practice, you know, all spring and all summer, again, you spending time watching film together, making sure you're seeing the same things. I think all that's really important. So I think that can all come together. But yeah, because, you know, I remember X moved, you know, they moved him in the spring, you know, to left tackle. And so, you know, and I, you know, X and I were friends and teammates, but I mean, I really got to know X, you know, in that off season. And obviously, you know, Ryan, I'd played with Ryan for a while, and John, you know, had come in and replaced me at various iterations at guard, you know, in 2006. And then Akim, as you said, Akim was a left tackle and went to the right tackle. So, you know, you can make that work. Now, again, I think one of the things that helped all that to coalesce was, you know, Eric Wolford is a great offensive line coach. He's still coaching, you know, still one of the best offensive line coaches in the country. And he knew the right buttons to push of how to get the best out of people. And again, you know, I think Bart Miller is very similar. I know Bart knows these guys, knows the right buttons to push. And, you know, a lot of that coalescing and chemistry, I think it's taking place now. And then ultimately what really has to happen is it has to be galvanized, you know, during a game, right? I mean, you have to be able to, you know, have positives and negatives, and you don't really build that trust and chemistry until things are really happening, right? I mean, we played Mizzou in St. Louis to open 2007, and it's a back and forth game, and Juice got hurt early, and, you know, Eddie McGee came in late, and, you know, we rallied back. We weren't able to get there, but we knew, we were like, okay, Missouri's really good. You know, we were there with them, and then
Northern was the next week, right? And then off to Syracuse,
we played Western.
That was it. Yeah. Western, the 21-0 game. Yeah,
yeah, that was an ugly game. Played Western, but really, I mean, again, for us, and then I don't remember.
I felt like Syracuse was the moment that it was like, hold on.
Syracuse was, yeah, it was the moment.
Offensive line, and that tailback's really good, and hold on a second. We haven't seen this in 6 years, but hold on. This might be really good. That was the moment.
And it was on the road.
Yes.
I mean, again, it was my fifth year. I'd won one road game.
Yeah.
Right?
So the Michigan State game?
Michigan State, yeah, the year prior. But, yeah, but that was really it. With Syracuse, I mean, you know, we had that game, and I remember coming, you know, and we just marched our ball right down the field, scored a touchdown, and we came back to the sidelines. And I remember, you know, we were talking on the sidelines. We're like, was that really just that easy?
Right.
Like, that was like a run-through.
Right.
And then we went and did it again, right? But that, and then, again, that the chemistry was building, and then you throw some confidence on top of it. And, again, I think that's something that's also very important to teams that are getting to know each other is, hey, you know, you face adversity, you overcome it, and then you push through, and then all of a sudden, you know, then it just, you know, it feeds upon itself throughout the course of the game.
Sure.
And season.
Sure.
I want to take you back to when Josh Whitman took over, mm-hmm. and then the hire of Lovey was made, and the, where Illinois football was at. And we marvel now where it's at, and rightfully so. But that in between, Josh Whitman is heralded as a fantastic athletic director, and he is. And he's, I mean, all for all the things that we've talked about in this podcast, and I'm sure in casual conversation. But where were you in that 16, 17, 18? And I'm not so... Partly, it's not to revisit just Lovey, mm-hmm. but just where were you in the can Illinois actually get to where you want it to be as an alum, as a fan, as a football player?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I think, you know, I'm always an optimist when it comes to this stuff. And, you know, again, I drew on my experience. I was like, okay, well, it took us kind of 4 years to figure it out, and then we got it figured out, you know, kind of during my time at Illinois. And, you know, I thought 19 was going to be kind of the turning of that, you know. And I, if you want to take a step back, again, Tim Beckman gets fired right before the 2015 season, like 2 weeks before, right? And so, again, you know, Illinois, you know, was not in a good place from a national reputation standpoint, because there's all these stories and all these other things, you know, and Bill Cuba did a great job that year. We were competitive. And then, you know, Josh hires Lovey. And I think, you know, I really like Lovey as a person. And I think, you know, Lovey also, you know, gave us some of that credibility that we didn't have in the broader marketplace at that time, and really kind of stabilized things. But ultimately, it didn't result in enough success on the field.
I mean, always say Lovey moved the ball down the field in terms of 100%. A football program.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
Bielma gets you in the end zone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think that's very fair. Yeah.
That's very punny.
Yes. And I mean, to be a bit fair, like the COVID season was weird, man. Like,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't working with Lovey. His best season was 6-6. All that. But to build to that, and then to have, I just remember the weirdness of that day of the Purdue game during COVID, when it was announced that 16 players were going to miss the game. And we're down to our fourth quarterback, because the starter had COVID and the backup and the third string had been in the room with him, so they were in quarantine and everything else. It's just so bizarre to think back to what that season was.
It was a weird time.
And what it became. And then, you know, the change was made. So when you... I'll just like give a little behind the scenes here. You and I have texted each other a fair bit over the last few years, where you'll just randomly text me on a Sunday night and just say like 7-1 or whatever, you know, like we have had these moments of like, I cannot believe this is real. Like, it's just been so great. So, I'm just curious from your fan side, as a former player, as a former broadcaster, in this, you know, we kind of touched on this at the beginning, but just your general satisfaction in having a team. This is something I've been writing about this morning for the preview of just like, I remember what it was like to just watch Iowa or watch Wisconsin and just say, like, do these fans, do they have any idea? Yeah. Do they understand how great their life is? They're complaining about 8-4 right now. Do you understand what I would give, what I would sacrifice for 8-4? So I know our conversations on this, and I just thought maybe it'd be good if you could share with our audience what it feels like to be on the other side of that with the recent success.
Yeah, I mean, it feels really good, right? I mean, there's nothing else to say.
It feels great.
Yeah, there's nothing else to say. I mean, but yeah, I think that's the piece of it is, and it's obviously not just sports. I mean, everybody's got a take about everything these days. And I think ultimately, I think people lose sight of context. And I think people lose sight of, you know, again, in this, just really everything's, you know, kind of that instant gratification culture. And so I always try to enjoy, you know, hey, right. Like, if, you know, get off to a good start, right. Just text us like, hey, look, I mean, look at us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is pretty good, right? Yes. Even going to the bowl game, like, hey, we're in Nashville.
Yep.
This is great. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, again, I mean, because I was, you know, I was this way as a player. I was certainly this way as a broadcaster. I'm like, God, if I could just get to Detroit.
Yes.
That would be, if I could just get to Detroit, that would be
the fan base that longs for the Motor City Bowl more than any other fan base on
Earth. Yeah, right? But, but no, so, and again, I always, the other part that always, because it always cut and it always hurt really bad on the other side was, you know, again, I like listening to college football podcasts. And again, you listen to these podcasts. And then again, when we weren't doing well, like somebody would take a pot shot and I was like, God.
Yeah,
you know, it just deflates you, right? Because you're like, this is my team. Like, I care about this team, and then you know, and then it was just kind of, you know, it's just like, oh boy, I hope we don't get a pot shot on this podcast. Like, just don't have a glancing blow.
Just
don't,
leave us alone.
Just leave us alone. Yeah. We get it. And again, now, like I said before, like you have the flip side of this where like people are pointing Illinois, saying like, hey, look, you're in the Big Ten, and again, you know, the bowl wins, and Brett Bielema's got him in a great place, and you know, again, I love the fact that Brett leads off, you know, Big Ten media days, and he's going to take his shots, you know, whenever he can, because that's what he does.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's fantastic, right? And I think that's the other piece of it is, you know, I'm glad you keep coming back to that. Is like even going into last year, I think people's expectations just kind of got crazy, right? Like again, sure, would it be great if we would go to the college football playoff? We have a ton of people coming back. Yeah, that would be awesome. Don't act like it's an awful season if we don't get there. Mm-hmm. Or hey, you know, you wind up running into a buzzsaw in the Indiana Hoosiers that nobody knew how good they were going to be at the time. But like, if you're watching the game, it's like, yeah, Indiana's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean we're terrible. We did not play well. Mm-hmm. But it also doesn't mean the season is sunk. And again, people, I think, vacillate too much back and forth, you know, the highs and the lows. And that is the piece where I look at it and I'm like, I feel really good about our program. I feel great about the leadership that's leading it. And, you know, again, and I like the way, I also don't take this for granted. You know, I mean, knock on wood, by and large, like we don't have off the field issues right now as a program.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of times where happened when I was here, right? Yes. Like there's a lot of those things. And again, you can speak for all the major sports. That matters to me, right? And it matters to me that we have people representing the University of Illinois in the right way. Granted, they're not here four consecutive years as much as they were previously, but still, I think that's also, you know, and I can't remember how many times we had the conversation. It's like, we could never identify inefficiencies in the market because we could never stick with the scheme long enough.
Yes.
Right? But when we didn't have an identity. Okay, we have an identity now. And when you have an identity and you're confident in what your identity is, now you're going to morph it and you're going to change it. Right, we got a defensive scheme change now. But, you know, again, I think by and large, we know the type of character of a recruit or a transfer that we're going after, and we know how they will fit in our program, and we will have a plan for them to allow them to maximize their success here, right? Like, and we didn't have that for a very long time.
Yep.
And so that's the part that feels good, is I feel like we know the type of people that we're trying to bring into the program. We know the type of people that will succeed here. We know the type of people that will not succeed here. And so that piece gives me more and more confidence going forward.
I'm not going to spoil the preview because I got this great stat in the preview I'm writing that you would not believe how long it's been since we had an offensive coordinator entering his fifth season. Stay tuned for that stat. How's that for a little drop it out there? Go ahead, Scott.
But just one of the reasons you've had an offensive coordinator for 5 years, it's remarkable both ways because he's a good offensive coordinator. And
hasn't been paid to go somewhere to be the OC or a head coach, yes.
Yeah, very. I think that's a little bit unique.
Well, real quick, my other favorite stat that existed about our staff, and again, that's on the negative side, was it was some unbelievably long period of time before somebody left Illinois for a promotion.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was it was a long time.
Yes. Yeah, sorry.
You and I have some similarities in our background. We both grew up in the western suburbs of Chicago, Naperville, Downers Grove. By the way, I spent the first 3 years of my life in Downers Grove, but that's neither here nor there. Now the roots are here in Champaign-Urbana. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, when you were playing, you know, you have a very successful career with Busey Bank, and congratulations on all the successes and the jersey patch now
and all that.
But, you know, did you have a mind of like, it's 2007. Yeah, in 2026, I'm going to be here in Champaign raising a family.
I think at that point, I knew I wanted to stay in Champaign. I didn't know what I was going to be doing because my wife is from Danville, and we got engaged in 2007. Yep, spring 2007. So I kind of knew I was going to be here. But, I mean, I knew during the recruiting process, like, one reason I ultimately didn't see myself at a place like Stanford or Oregon is I was like, I'm not a West Coast guy. Right. You know, I knew I was a Big Ten guy, Midwest. Mm-hmm. I didn't know exactly what that meant, but I'm like, I probably want to live in the Midwest. And then when I came down here to school,
us DuPage County guys, a little more blue collar that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But, But I knew coming down here, I'm like, oh, this is nice. Like, there's not a lot of traffic. And if I want to go 10 miles somewhere, it'll take 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I can do that math. But yeah, so I knew it was a place I liked. I mean, I've probably never been the most advanced planner in any way, shape, or form. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that I'm still here. I mean, but I think Champaign is great. I mean, it's a great place to raise a family. You got enough with the university and everything there. And yeah, I probably wouldn't be surprised if I told myself in 2007 that, hey, you're still going to be here and raising a family.
Of course, the news came out this week. The Big Ten is, if you've been in an NFL camp, even if you've signed, if you were drafted, if you went in the draft, you're not allowed to come back and play. So there's still a chance for you to come back.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. You did five.
You too. Yeah.
He did five. Yes. He used all five.
I think you have a better chance than I do. Yeah. But we've discussed this before. You were a good offensive lineman. Pro aspirations were not in your plans?
No. I mean, like I said, I was never really great at planning, right? So and that was probably one of the downfalls that I had as a student was, you know, I tell younger people this, like when I talk to them now, I was like, I had tunnel vision. It was next practice, you know, next class, next assignment, next game, and next lift, and you kind of go from there, and hey, I'll figure it out later. But no, I mean, it was never, I was just trying to get to Detroit in 2007. Right? I was just trying to win six games, so my entire 5 years wasn't a waste.
Coaches probably loved that mindset from you.
Yeah, maybe. but no, I think that was really my focus, and, you know, again, I probably would not have been drafted. You know, again, I say it all the time. Like, I was the second least athletic offensive lineman on our team in 2007. I probably would have gotten into a camp, but I knew what that life was. Like, I knew guys who'd kind of done that and tried to chase it, and that wasn't for me, and I was just kind of ready to figure out what was next.
Did that mean, though, you were a really smart offensive lineman? You got to win your physicality, right? But were you constantly going, I know I got to kind of I can outwit this guy across from me?
Yeah, I mean, I put a lot of time in film study, right? And I think one of the things I figured out early is how I learn, you know, and for me, and what it took for me to feel confident. And again, the talent edge at this level of football is not as large as a lot of people would think it is, but a lot of it comes down to, you know, you can control your preparation and you can control your effort, right? And so for me, I knew what I had to do in order to feel comfortable from a preparation standpoint. So yeah, so I knew our offense. I knew how, you know, we'd handle different looks, and then we'd prepare. Right? I mean, I remember I'd go and sit with, you know, Ryan McDonald, you know, the night before games in the hotel, and we'd walk through different protections, right? If we get this, what do we do to this? If we get this, what do we do this, right? And so we just kind of go back and forth and make sure that we were on the same page. And if we were on the same page, then we make sure everybody else is on the same page. And again, even if you're wrong, but you're on the same page, you can survive. You know, and so I think from a mental standpoint, I think I was a pretty smart player. Yeah.
Well, we don't want to hold you here forever, but I do have one other thing I want to throw out there.
Okay.
So,
no, I will not long jump.
Could you long jump 10 feet? So we didn't do it last year. So he and I had this tradition. I would come up to Camp Rentoul. I would cover the team. The last night of Camp Rentoul, I would go by his house in Champaign. We would sit, we would have a drink, and we would talk about the season. Is this the team that's going to be good? Then is this the team is going to be good? We did it.
Are we going to get some drinks out? Is that what you're saying?
No. Oh, okay. I'm saying we have to do this in the next week before the first game, because we didn't do it last year and we haven't enjoyed this. We have had so many of those drinks saying, is it, could it be, maybe someday, what if? We would put these lists together of, you know, if that guy is really good, and if this guy makes the leap, and this.
Maybe it's the this game.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Yes. Right. Oh, maybe it could be like that. And remember when we surprised Minnesota in 2014? All of that to say, like, we have to do that again, because we need to recognize this moment. Because, like, as I've, you know, shared when we've done podcasts together before, you know, you and I kind of walked this path together through the 2010s as friends, and, you know, in the press box and this and that. And it's great for me to talk to you, because it just brings all of that back of so many, like you mentioned, the phone calls after games, just so many times of, like, could it, should it, whatever. I've written about it so many times in the offseason. People are like, Robert, enough. Like, okay, we get it. We're good now. But I'm like, I could write 300 more articles like that.
Yeah, right.
Because
you haven't brought it up in this episode much.
Yes. It's just, I mean, that's the theme. Like, we talked about doing a preview, and it's like, well, we could sit here and say, like, what do you think of Kaden Hauser? And is Valentine ready for a breakout? But the true story of this is that 7-5 would still be glorious. To me, that's the true story of where we're at as a program, is that 7-5 would be so much fun for me. Because of where we were, because we were in jail for so long,
right?
Because of all those moments of could it, will it ever? And again, you're an announcer for 9 years on the road and at home watching every game, wondering if you're ever going to get to say good things about the team.
Yeah.
So I'm just putting you on the spot here, on camera here.
Okay.
We have to do it in the next week.
Okay.
That whole thing was just
we'll
to make
you
say.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You're like, let's see. We're acquiring 6 banks tomorrow. I have to be in 9 different places, but yes.
Are you an investment banker? Wow.
Maybe I'll do that. I'll like make a
that's
profile.
How that works. You just buy a half a dozen.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what happens, right?
Sure.
That's what I mean. I just have a landscape architecture degree, but still.
Let me say, I've now heard this guy make some claims. Even more than I don't think you can long jump 10 feet, I don't think he can be an investment banker. I'm just going to put that out there.
You have no idea how bad I would be. You have no idea
how bad I would be. I have a perfectly good idea at how bad you would be. Yeah, I have a perfectly good idea at how bad you would be at something like that.
It would be
just
stay in your
lane. Just stay in your lane.
Yes.
Right?
I know my lane.
You're going to show up sweating. Just... Yeah, just staying on your tie. I mean, this is...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Gotta get you guys a water and just spill the whole jar in the middle of the... Yeah.
Just drop a big pot of chili. Yeah.
Yes. That is... Yes.
I know exactly how bad
you
would be at it.
I get it.
Yes, I get
so,
it.
So well.
I know.
Oh, I get it. God, I love it. I love it.
But, you know...
Look,
but just,
I gotta be me.
Thank you for knowing my
you're
world.
Very good at that. Yeah, you're very good at that.
Go ahead.
But yes, so anyway, all that to say, it's just, I can't say it enough how great it is to be here as a program, even if it's 7-5, because the fact that we would be talking about 7-5 as a disappointment is probably the greatest thing said about Illinois football in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
It's just insane, given the conversations you and I have had in the last 15 years of where we are at, and I'm never going to shut up about it. All that to not even ask a question.
Yeah, I was saying no point in the last 5 minutes was a question asked.
No. I know. That's why I just
sit
and wait.
No point in your incoherent rambling.
Yeah.
Scott, quick, ask a question. Do something professional.
Martin, have you learned anything here at this table?
No. Yeah. I really haven't.
Well, then our job.
It confirmed a lot of my preconceptions. Yeah.
What's it going to be like in there? Well... You guessed it.
Did Robert send you anything to think about? Nope.
Nope. Did he prep you at all for what you'd be talking about? Nope. What did he tell you he'd be on camera? No, he did not. No.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Hope you can come again. You might say that Martin O'Donnell left his mark on the Illinois football program, but actually, more accurately, you left a patch on the Illinois football team.
Oh,
well played.
Yes, well played. Done.
Can't thank you enough for being here.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
We crossed paths a bit on the radio in years gone by. It was always fun missing you up there, but I know you're in the right spot now on game days.
100%.
Absolutely. Do you have a vibe as we go into game week next week that you want to share about 2026?
A vibe?
Yeah. A feeling, a vibe.
I feel good.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I think the Duke game is important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is
that a good enough vibe?
I keep saying we're going to find out everything we need to know in the third quarter of the Duke game. I won't know anything until the third quarter of the Duke game. So don't ask me a question.
Okay, but
third
I didn't ask what game. Your vibe was. I asked his vibe.
Oh, is he the guest?
He is.
Oh. Am I supposed to be asking questions or something? I thought this was my podcast.
Positive vibes? I mean, is that kind of positive vibes only? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Good vibes only.
Good vibes.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome here anytime.
Okay.
Yes. And if you need...
Maybe I'll take you up on it.
If you need any help acquiring banks, just call me. I've got some... I got some ideas for you.
Yeah.
We'll get right to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Martin O'Donnell is our guest here on Light the Eye. We'll be right back. Have you ever watched a football game together?
He and I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for several seasons in the press box sitting next to each other, yes.
Yeah, okay, but that's a little different. You did talk about the fit, but...
Yeah, I had to whisper.
What would it be like if you...
See, I'm not...
I don't know, on the couch together or in the stands?
I'm not the... I've always said that I'm the worst person to watch a game with because I get so nervous. As soon as USC started the comeback last September, I don't...
Now I'm just going back to you and being Kevin Malone in the Chili as a banker.
Yes. I just can't... I clam up to where I can barely even stand. I will sometimes be like, I'm in the front row, so I have the railing in front of me, and I'll just like literally be on my knees hugging the railing. I don't have it in me to like...
Are there other people around that are going, is this man okay?
My entire life.
Does he need...
When I was a student, it was like that. That's why I've always told people, like, the like sitting in press row for basketball fits me because I'm just in my own element. Like, when I'm at a game with four people now and I'm, like, watching from the stands, it's distracting because I can't carry on conversations. I'm just such a bundle of nerves. Remember, I'm the human being that we're up 12 on Houston and going to line, and Boswell misses back-to-back free throws. I went and hid underneath the stands because I couldn't take it anymore. I watched the rest of that game through a little tiny opening in a curtain underneath the seats that went down on that end in Houston because I can't take it. I'm just a bundle, a ball of nerves and... Like, I can't do it. And then once we win, then I just, there's this release that no one could fully understand.
I think you carry the burden of the aggregate sum of all of Illinois fandom's nerves and anxiety, and it's all placed upon your shoulders, and I hope you have a heart doctor.
I do. I see a cardiologist every year. I do. That's a true story. So I'm in good shape. Ticker's in great shape. Got it checked in January. And that was a good thing because March was really, really hard for me. I'm just not that guy who can handle it.
March was incredible.
Yes.
And it was hard for you.
Yes.
Would you prefer the alternative?
I would like to note that when I was down there in that corner pacing, losing my mind, there was a certain athletic director right next to me pacing as well.
Yeah, his level of investment in the whole thing
is... Yes, a little bit different than guy who wants this really badly. But yes, at a football game, I'm not a fun hang, man. I'm just not. I melt down.
One day I want to get a camera and mic you up and just... That's a podcast.
It would be such terrible... Like, oh, look, he didn't move for 13 minutes. And he stared straight ahead contemplating what life would be like if we lose this game. That's me in the stands.
Okay, next time we meet, we are going to get... We've, I think, done as much as we can to... get ourselves ready for the football season.
Especially since we don't know anything until the third quarter of the Duke game.
But how about how to go to football games? How to be a fan, with which you have some experience in? I don't know that everything you do should be prescriptive for somebody's
point.
Life, but
yes.
Maybe descriptive. But on the other hand, anyway, we're going to get... I want your take. We're not always used to 60,000 people.
Yes.
Football, this fan base knows their basketball.
Yes.
There's some people that are new to football.
Yes.
Let's talk about football fandom for Illinois. The guide to be, and we're going to do some, the guide to being a fan. And there are new things to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
There's new traffic patterns.
Yep.
So that is all coming up.
In the Yes. We could go 6 hours and I would not run out of things to talk about. Like my, I could talk forever about game day in Champaign in the fall. What to do, where to go, what are the secrets, what are the do's, what are the don'ts. Yeah. I mean, I missed a home game since, oh gosh, 2016, something like that. I can't remember. 2019 Nebraska was the last time I missed a home game. So I can tell you everything.
There you go. Thanks to our guest, Martin O'Donnell. Thanks to our hosts here in the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning in the campus of the University of Illinois. Thanks to our editor, Kayla Podgursky. For Martin O'Donnell, for my co-host, Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. Can't wait to talk to you again the next time we light the eye.